Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we slice through the noise and get straight to the insights you need to navigate our complex world. Today, we're plunging headfirst into a topic that, honestly, is woven into the very fabric of our daily lives, often without us even realizing it. Data.
It really is everywhere.
Yeah, influencing everything from, you know, the simple choices we make about what to buy to how we manage our budgets, and even the shows that just seamlessly appear in our streaming recommendations.
Uh-huh. Those algorithms know us well.
They do. So we're guided today by some truly insightful source material, the book Data is for Everyone, which aims to strip away the jargon and demystify this powerful concept.
It's a great read for that. Yeah.
Our mission for this deep dive is to uncover how data assists in problem solving, how to think about it effectively, its various types, and its practical uses. You know, from your personal daily routine all the way to the complex operations of global businesses, we're going to show you why understanding data is more crucial than ever before.
Absolutely. It's becoming a fundamental literacy.
Exactly. And by the end of this deep dive, you're going to gain a brand new lens, really, through which to view the information all around you. It'll provide valuable insights into making better choices and understanding the world more clearly, all without that feeling of being totally overwhelmed by information overload.
Which is easy to feel these days.
Oh, definitely. Okay, let's unpack this. When we hear the word data, our minds often leap straight to, like, complex spreadsheets, algorithms, maybe tech experts in a server room.
Yeah, the sort of high-tech image.
Right. But the core message of data is for everyone is that it's far more fundamental and much more personal than that.
It's a brilliant starting point because the idea of data can feel so intimidating, can't it?
It really can.
But what's truly fascinating is how pervasive this concept is. Data is essentially any information, any piece of knowledge that people or companies use to make choices about their future behaviors or, you know, to look back on the choices they've already made. And you're absolutely right. It's not just for tech experts.
Mm-hmm.
Think about something as common as creating a household budget. You're collecting data.
Okay.
You're reviewing previous bills to see your spending patterns, maybe even if you didn't consciously label it that way. You're trying to predict future spending based on past information. That's data analysis, basically.
It makes perfect sense. It's making it tangible.
Mm-hmm.
So if even our grilled cheese habits are data, how does that translate to something a bit more substantial? The authors give some great relatable examples.
They do.
Like knowing your kids eat grilled cheese twice a week tells you how much bread to buy. Simple.
Exactly. Practical.
Or if you've consistently spent around $200 on holiday gifts for the past few years, that's your data informing how much you need to save for this upcoming holiday. It's almost unconscious, really.
Precisely. And businesses apply this exact same logic, just, you know, on a grander scale.
Right.
They predict what a store should stock based on previous sales data, or maybe anticipate what the weather could be like next week to plan supply chains, things like that. The profound insight here, and it's something everyone can grasp, is that the better we understand and collect our data, the better our choices can be. Flawed data leads to flawed decisions. It's almost that simple. The more accurate our data, the more accurate our predictions and our understanding of past trends. It's a direct correlation.
Better data, better decisions.
Yeah,
Got it. So if data is this powerful tool we're all already using often unconsciously, how do we actually use it effectively? Especially when we're trying to solve a specific problem. The book Data is for Everyone lays out a brilliant roadmap, a step-by-step process for problem solving with data, moving from defining the problem all the way to taking action.
Yeah, it's a really clear framework.
But where does the biggest hurdle usually lie in that process? What trips people up?
Well, often the biggest hurdle is right at the beginning. Or sometimes it's when you don't even realize you're collecting data or collecting it poorly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's about transforming raw, often chaotic information into actionable intelligence.
Actionable intelligence. I like that.
And the authors emphasize that it all begins with defining the problem and success. This isn't just about identifying what's wrong. It's crucially about outlining what success would actually look like once that problem is solved. Without a clear target, you're just firing in the dark, essentially.
Can't hit a target you haven't defined, right? Makes total sense. So once we know what we're aiming for, the next step is collect your data, the foundations of accuracy. This is where you gather all the relevant information. And relevant feels like the key word here, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's easy to just start collecting everything under the sun.
Yeah, data hoarding.
Exactly. But the real insight here, often learned the hard way, is that flawed data is worse than no data at all.
See more about that.
Well, think of it like trying to navigate with a broken compass. You'd rather stay put than head confidently in the wrong direction.
Yeah, good analogy.
The authors highlight several critical considerations for data quality. Imagine tracking your weekly expenses. Sometimes you write dollars, sometimes USD, maybe sometimes just cash spent.
Oh, I can see how that gets messy fast.
Right. Or maybe you forget to write down the date half the time. That inconsistency in form and units or a lack of completeness can completely derail your insights later on.
So consistency is key.
Hugely key. You also need consistency in format, whether it's text, a whole number, you know, an integer or a number with decimals, a float, and perhaps most critically, accuracy. As the book puts it, blank is better than inaccurate.
Blank is better than inaccurate.
Yeah. It's far better to have a missing piece of information than a misleading one. You need to measure all data in the same consistent way. Like if you're using a ruler, ensure you are always consistent with where you consider the start of your measurement. Don't fudge things or make stuff up. Even if it seems minor, it adds up.
That's a crucial distinction. Inaccurate data can steer you completely wrong. It's like having a map with the wrong roads. You genuinely rather have no map than one that misleads you.
Precise.
Okay. So once you've meticulously collected your accurate and consistent data, the third step is structure your data, making sense of the chaos. This is all about organization.
Exactly. And this isn't just about tidiness, like having neat columns. It's about making your data speak to you clearly, preventing misinterpretations that could lead to costly mistakes down the line.
Right.
The book truly underscores how a well-structured data set is like a clear story, where every character, every plot point is exactly where it should be. You need consistent order to prevent confusion, like clearly distinguishing between a book's title, author, and editor, for instance. They need their own spaces.
Mm-hmm.
For spreadsheet-like data, the arrangement of rows versus columns is important for clarity. It makes a difference how you set it up.
And labeling.
Oh, data labels are absolutely critical. Ensure each row, column, or whatever element you're using is clearly labeled so you know precisely what you're looking at. No guesswork. And as you mentioned earlier, specifying the expected type of data, like text or integer or float, that helps maintain order and integrity too. It's about building a robust, understandable foundation.
Okay. Building that solid foundation. So with our data collected, cleaned up, and meticulously structured, we finally move to analyze your data, uncovering the story. This is where we finally roll up our sleeve and start to make sense of everything we've gathered, right?
This is where the detective work really begins, yeah? The process involves collecting, processing, defining, cleaning, all that groundwork, so that you can finally do something meaningful with it.
And how does that analysis actually happen? Is it just staring at numbers?
Well, sometimes. For smaller data sets, a human can often analyze it visually, spotting trends or outliers with their own eyes. But as the book points out, with larger data sets, it's much more common, and frankly necessary, to use computer programs to sift through the information. There's just too much otherwise.
Right. The scale demands tools.
Exactly. And the type of analysis you do really depends on the data itself. For numerical data, you know, numbers, statistical analysis might show trends, like the book's example, less books borrowed on a Tuesday.
Okay.
For textual data, like customer reviews or social media comments, text analysis might reveal patterns. For instance, people are less satisfied with their books in January because reviews contain more negative words. It's about finding those hidden stories and patterns that aren't obvious just by looking at the raw stuff.
Finding the story in the data. I like that. And once you found those stories, those insights, the fifth step is visualize your data communicating insights.
Yeah.
This is about taking those numbers or text patterns and presenting them in a way that's easier for humans to understand, often through graphs or charts, right? To clearly show trends.
Exactly. Pictures worth a thousand words, or numbers in this case.
Yeah. And it's so important to make sure other people can follow what's going on in your data, because insight isn't much good if it just stays locked in your head or in a complex spreadsheet.
Absolutely. Communication is key. However, there's a significant warning here that the book strongly highlights, almost shouting it from the rooftops, really.
Oh, what's the warning?
Data visualizations can be manipulated.
Okay. That sounds important.
It really is.
Yeah.
This is where critical thinking becomes paramount when you're looking at data visualizations. Everything from the color palette chosen to the scale on the axes, the size of the visual elements, the specific measurements highlighted, it all matters.
So the way it's presented can change the message.
Dramatically. Bias can greatly influence what is shown. Raw data, when you just look at lines and lines of it, is unlikely to be helpful on its own. And the book even showcases examples of horrible data visualizations as a potent cautionary tale. It's a powerful reminder to always question what you're seeing.
Wow.
Because what looks like a clear truth on a chart can often be a carefully crafted illusion intended to persuade you in a certain way.
That's a crucial point for anyone consuming information today, which is everyone. We need to be critical consumers of charts and graphs presented to us.
Definitely. Always ask questions about how it was made.
Okay. So, being wary of visualizations, we finally reach step six. Inform next steps, actionable intelligence. This is where you ask, what is your ultimate goal with this data? What are you trying to do?
Exactly. It brings us full circle back to the very first step of defining the problem and success. What was the point of all this work?
Right.
Do you want to show sales in a month to determine when you need more hours worked, perhaps? Or more stock ordered, maybe more employees on call, or even different kinds of stock altogether?
Tailoring the action to the goal.
Precisely. And crucially, is the data you've gathered and analyzed enough to make that decision confidently? Does a monthly frequency make sense for your goal, or do you need daily data? Or maybe yearly is fine. This final step is all about transforming those insights, those stories you found, into concrete, measurable actions that drive results. Without this, all the previous steps are just, well, an interesting academic exercise.
Right. Data for data's sake isn't the point. It has to lead somewhere. Okay. So we've gone through defining the problem, collecting, structuring, analyzing, visualizing, and then acting. But what kind of insights are we really looking for when we do all this work? Data is for Everyone introduces two powerful types of data mining that help us look both backward and forward.
Yes, and this raises an important question about the fundamental purpose of our analysis. Are we trying to understand what has happened, or are we trying to figure out what might happen next? This distinction between descriptive data mining and predictive data mining is absolutely key, and it shapes entirely different approaches to your data. It's a really useful way to think about it.
Okay, let's start with descriptive. That sounds like looking back, like describing the past.
Precisely. You can think of it as looking in the rearview mirror. Descriptive data mining is all about how we describe and summarize our existing data, focusing squarely on what has already occurred.
Okay.
It helps us identify anomalies, patterns, past trends, you know, get a clear picture of the landscape behind us. For example, it might be used to generate reports on previous sales behaviors or customer demographics. Or it could be used to see if there's a potential correlation, like the example people buy fewer books during wage downturns. It's about making sense of the journey so far, understanding what happened.
Understanding what happened. Got it. Then we have predictive data mining, which sounds like it's looking through the windshield instead, trying to anticipate the road ahead.
Exactly that. A perfect analogy. Predictive data mining is about what you think might happen in the future based on that historical data and those observed patterns you found with descriptive analysis.
So using the past to forecast.
Exactly. Its applications are incredibly broad. Think about predicting market trends for what to order in a store, or anticipating stock needs for a busy holiday season, maybe even forecasting which customers might leave a subscription service customer churn. It's used to try and guess, intelligently guess, what's going to happen next. Like, what specific stock should we have in a store next month to maximize sales? It moves from understanding the past to actively anticipating the future.
That makes sense. Let's apply this to the library example the book uses, just to make it concrete, for descriptive data. A library could analyze last year's borrowing records to see which genres were most popular, or identify peak borrowing times. Maybe finding that, yes, fewer books are borrowed on a Tuesday. Simple, straightforward observations of the past.
Right, just stating the facts of what occurred.
Then, based on those descriptive trends, what would predictive look like for the library?
Well, the library could then use predictive data to make informed decisions for the future. They could anticipate demand for certain genres, maybe sci-fi is trending up based on the last 6 months, and then decide what types of new sci-fi books to order for the upcoming season, ensuring popular titles are in stock when people want them. Or they could predict how many staff members are needed on a Saturday afternoon versus a Tuesday morning based on historical foot traffic patterns, which helps optimize their resources and budget.
Okay.
It's that direct line from understanding the past, the descriptive part, to strategically informing the future, the predictive part.
Very clear. Okay, let's bring this all back home to our everyday lives. Our source encourages us to discuss how deeply data influences our decisions and experiences, often in subtle ways we don't even notice.
And what's truly striking here, I think, is just how the prevalence of data collection and analysis has exploded, changed so rapidly in recent years.
It feels exponential.
It really does.
Yeah.
We're constantly generating and interacting with data, whether we're actively aware of it or not, and it's shaping our decisions, influencing our experiences, even impacting society at large. Think about the sheer number of common sources of data in your daily routine.
Like what?
Well, the apps on your phone tracking your location or fitness, your online browsing habits, every search you do, your social media interactions, likes, shares, and even your smart home devices, you know, thermostats, speakers, they're constantly monitoring activity. Every click, every step, every purchase leaves a data footprint.
And it absolutely influences our decision making. Sometimes, obviously. Sometimes maybe less so. I mean, think about how personalized product recommendations influenced a recent online purchase you might have made.
Oh, yeah. People who bought this also bought.
Exactly. Or how a navigation app steered you clear of traffic this morning. That's all based on real-time and historical data. We see the effects everywhere, from the ads we're shown to the news articles that pop up in our feeds.
It personalizes our experience, which can be good.
Sure.
But it also means we're constantly being read by these systems. Analyzed, profiled in a way.
Which leads us to a critical question, maybe the critical question for you, our listener, to ponder. Do you feel that you have control over your personal data?
That's a big one.
Yeah. Or is it often collected without your explicit granular consent? This is a huge area of discussion right now, legally and ethically. And it's an important aha moment for anyone navigating today's digital landscape.
For example, when you quickly click accept on those long user agreements for an app, what exactly are you agreeing to? Does anyone actually read them?
Almost nobody, I'd wager.
Right. How much transparency is there really about how your personal information is stored, analyzed, and potentially shared or sold? Understanding where your data comes from, who has it, and how it's being used. That's becoming more and more important as we move forward.
So we've taken quite a journey today through the dynamic world of data. We went from its most basic function in problem solving and making everyday choices, like buying bread.
The grilled cheese standard. Y'all.
All the way to the intricacies of collecting, structuring, analyzing, and visualizing it properly.
And we explored that powerful distinction between descriptive data looking back and predictive data looking forward.
And discussed its pervasive, often hidden, role in our modern lives.
And understanding these principles, as they're so clearly outlined and data is for everyone, it doesn't just make you well-informed, though it does do that. It really empowers you. It empowers you to critically engage with and navigate this data-rich world with, hopefully, greater clarity and better critical thinking skills. It allows you to become a more discerning consumer of information.
Like questioning those charts.
Exactly. And maybe a more effective problem solver in your own life and work, using these steps consciously.
Okay, so here's the final thought to leave you with. Given how deeply data influences your choices and experiences from your daily commute, your online purchases, how you budget, even the news you consume, how will your newfound understanding of its collection, its analysis, and crucially, the potential for manipulation, how will that change how you interact with data in your own life and the world around you?
What new questions will you start asking about the information you encounter every day? And about the systems that are shaping your digital reality.
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.